This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This is On Point. I'm Ray Suarez. At least 10 people were killed by a 17-year-old student at Santa Fe High School in Texas Friday. Again, the country is mourning, opening up the debate on gun control, school safety, mental health. And we try out 13 ways of looking at a white boy, a teenage boy wearing a trench coat who posted "Born to Kill" on his Facebook page, planned to murder schoolmates and kill himself. You can join the conversation. More armed guards, metal detectors, fewer exits. What needs to change at school? Or is it gun laws that need to change? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Columbia, Tennessee, via Skype is David French, senior writer for National Review. You can link to his recent story headlined, "The Best Explanation for Our Spate of Mass Shootings is the Least Comforting," at our website, onpointradio.org. David, welcome to On Point.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it very much.
And for people who haven't read the story, decode that for us. The best explanation, the least comforting. What did you mean?
Yeah, so I went back to a very important 2015 essay in The New Yorker from Malcolm Gladwell that I think was eerily prescient of what we're experiencing. And in essence, what Gladwell's thesis was, that we're in the midst of, and ever since Columbine, that we're in the midst of what he characterized as a slow motion riot, almost like a contagion, where the threshold for each new mass killing was being lowered by each previous mass killing, so that a person who commits the next mass killing is maybe, perhaps, and this is counterintuitive to an awful lot of people, less disturbed than the person who committed the mass killing before, and that the grievances and the sense of grievance, or the mental difficulties or mental health problems, or the level of rage of various mass killers is actually decreasing as mass killings get normalized. And it's an extremely provocative and interesting thesis, but it's one that's grounded in an awful lot of disturbing data, in particular in the way in which the Columbine killers have achieved an almost cult-like status in this very small subgroup of people who either ponder or who commit mass killings. And one of the things that stood out to me in the initial reporting of this Texas, terrible Texas killing, was the way in which the killer, at least based on these early reports, had copied elements of the Columbine shootings, down to trench coat wearing, down to attempted use of explosives in addition to firearms, and even the kinds of firearms he used, although he took them from his father. The Columbine killers also had shotguns, had handguns also. And so there are elements of this that suggest a very elaborate and very premeditated copycatting going on at scale around the country, and that this is something that is, as Gladwell noted in remarks later, is very difficult to deal with. It is not susceptible to quick, easy gun control solutions. Instead, it's a phenomenon that has become deeply rooted in a subset of our culture, and therefore very difficult to root out.
So, David French, once the matrix is created by Harris and Klebold in April of 1999. That's 19 years ago. And this young fellow, Dimitrios Pangourtsis, is 17 years old. So he's looking back to something that happened before he was born.
Well, and the interesting thing is, this is not, again, you know, there's a lot we don't know about this current shooting. But if you look at other shootings, not just at home, but also abroad, a shockingly high percentage of school shooters or attempted school shooters have explicit callbacks to Columbine. It's almost as if when Columbine happened, something snapped. There were multiple school shootings before Columbine, but before Columbine, they were disconnected and very idiosyncratic. After Columbine, you began to see these very common themes emerging. And as bizarre and weird as it sounds, there was almost a cult of personality that grew up around Harrison Klebold, and that it actually echoes beyond school shootings. And so this is something that when we're thinking through the challenge of mass shootings, which is a category of crime, it's distinct from, you know, normal, what you would call, quote unquote, normal gun crime, and it's distinct as a category of gun death that's different from suicides, that it presents some extremely challenging scenarios for law enforcement, for families, for school officials, as they're trying to figure out how to deal with this crisis.
As disturbing as the suggestion is that once the Columbine model, let's say, is injected into the public bloodstream, you can't get it out, our collective subconscious, as disturbing as that is, what's more shocking for me is the near mathematical way both you and Gladwell lay out this idea that the threshold to being able to commit a crime like this is shallower with each subsequent crime. That makes preventing them almost feel like it's impossible.
Well, right. And you know, this latest shooting, again, you know, we're still early in the investigation, is very different and feels different in some ways from the Parkland shooting. In the Parkland shooting, the shooter gave off warning sign after warning sign after warning sign. Here in this circumstance, people are trying to stitch together what were the warning signs. And, you know, they've come up with he wore a Born to Kill shirt, or he had this or, you know, that kind of clothing that was alarming. But, you know, if you have much interaction with teenage boys, you know that the number of boys who will, you know, wear a provocative shirt or say something provocative online is almost limitless. And so, you know, this one almost seems to fit perfectly within that Gladwellian thesis that says that more normal, quote unquote normal, although you can never call somebody who does this normal, but more quote unquote normal people will contemplate this as this contagion, as this sort of slow motion riot, as he described it, spreads. And the really interesting thing is to sort of track this phenomenon, not just school shootings, but, you know, mass shootings more broadly in our culture. We have a real, distinct, serious crisis right now of these nation-shaking mass shootings, with people coming at them from a variety of different backgrounds and a variety of different surface motivations, but time and time again fitting similar patterns.
Rapid City, South Dakota's next. Tim, welcome to the program.
Yes, hi, Ray. Thanks for taking the call. I was listening to probably most of On Point's sessions about gun control and shootings for many, many months now. And my observations are two. I have 2 points to make. And one, feeding off of your prior segment, there's an individual, one of your guests said, let's just do something, that progress leads to progress. Baby steps will lead to bigger things and better solutions. I think that applies to this situation as well. My 2 points are this. Number one, as one of the news programs said, Sunday morning programs, one individual said, let's stop publicly announcing the shooter's name and making these people icons to some troubled youths and creating the cult-like responses that some people are having. So why we're glamorizing to some individuals the individual person and shooter's name is kind of an easy fix for me to stop doing it. If the press could jump on board with that, we could have a great start. And number two, parental responsibility. There's probably no situation, school shooting situation, that screams for elevating that discussion than this particular tragedy. In Newtown, perhaps it has an element of that. But quite honestly, if you follow the NRA safety protocols, you have everything locked up. And there's no way that your child or young adult should be able to access a weapon. And that's really my thoughts.
David French, how do you respond to Tim?
Well, yeah, you know, I think that when we're looking at the problem of mass shootings, first we have to understand there's no silver bullet. There's no particular gun control method that's going to put a stop to it. There are a lot of things we have to think through. And one of the things that I have talked about, and this is actually a solution that has come from some progressive thinkers on thinking sort of creatively about how to deal with gun violence. And this is something called the Gun Violence Restraining Order. And a gun violence restraining order essentially takes a look at the reality of a lot of these mass killings, which is, aside from the Texas shooting, often these guys give off a ton of warning signs, and yet family members and school officials do not have great legal tools at their disposal to deal with them. And what a gun violence restraining order does is it allows a person like a family member or, say, a school principal to go to a local court and seek, with full due process, a temporary restraining order to take guns from a person who has demonstrated that they're a danger to themselves or others. And this is something that I think has real promise because, again, the Texas shooting aside, and if you look at mass shootings time and time again, you will have seen clear warning signs where many of the people around the shooter will have felt helpless in knowing how to deal with it. So I think there's a tool there that people should think about and should consider that respects due process, it respects the Second Amendment, and responds to the actual facts on the ground. Because one of the things that you've seen time and time and time again with these mass shooters is that these mass shootings are elaborately planned, and they often, as I said, sort of wave around red flags. Now, again, that's not a solution for every case. And for example, in this Texas shooting, one of the things that's so chilling about it is it doesn't seem to be a kid where everyone suspected this or everyone predicted this. But again, that I think that's a step that respects the Second Amendment, respects constitutional notions of due process, but gives families and school officials a tool to take some proactive steps.
David French, do you think it's realistic, given the temper of the times, given that even some of the seemingly simplest proposals die in legislatures without being acted upon because of the fraught nature of the debate over guns in this country?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think there's some hope on the gun violence restraining order front. The NRA has endorsed the concept. You saw a red state, Florida, pass a very similar kind of law through the legislature after Parkland. There's been widespread bipartisan support for the concept, but, you know, as we know, there can be bipartisan support for legislative initiatives, and we still hit gridlock. That's a sad reality of our times, but I do think there is hope here. And the other thing is, I think we're beginning to reach a point because, as I said earlier, these mass shootings are nation-shaking events. These are events that are deeply felt across the political spectrum, across the country, and as they seem to be happening. And you know, there's statistical debates about the frequency of them, but there doesn't seem to be much debate about the lethality of them these days. That they seem to be more lethal. And happening with regularity, that I think there will be increasing openness to a combination of prophylactic measures like the gun violence restraining order, improved mental health, improved attention on mental health, and defensive measures. While we're waiting for some of the prophylactic measures to have an effect, what can you do to harden the target more than we are already doing? And those kinds of things, I think, have to happen in tandem.
A caller from St. Albans, Vermont, checked in to remind us that Matthew Milby, a 19-year-old Dixon, Illinois man who authorities say fired shots near a gymnasium full of students at the local high school, exchanged gunfire with a school resource officer. He was taken into custody and charged with 3 felony counts of aggravated discharge of a firearm. Thomas thought that story wasn't getting enough coverage in the current context of Santa Fe. We'll make one last stop this hour, Evansville, Indiana. April, welcome to the program.
Hi, Ray. As a former teacher, I wanted to make a comment about the framework within a school system. I feel 20 years ago, we had a counselor for boys and a counselor for girls and a full-time nurse on staff. and we've really gotten away from that because of budget issues. They feel as if we had that framework available to us still, that maybe that we could preempt some of these shootings and some of the issues that the kids are dealing with.
So, April, what do you think about the proposal from David French? He just explained it earlier about a gun violence restraining order, that the kinds of things that you were talking about being detected once upon a time might actually land you in a court, get you a hearing, and if it's felt that there's need, to take away your firearms.
I'm actually against guns, so I am okay with that. I think that we spend way too much time fighting about whether you should have a gun or not. I think that we are past that point, that we really need to just make some progress forward. And if that means that we have to take away someone's gun, then that means that less children are going to die.
April, thanks a lot for your call. Final thoughts, David French, before we wrap it up for this hour?
Yeah, I think that the key here is to not look at what we're dealing with as a problem with a simple solution, where we can immediately fall back to our PAT idea that says, on the right, it's often, well, we just need to harden the target and have, legislative regimes or teachers have guns. And on the left, it says, well, universal background checks or assault weapons ban. And we immediately seem to retreat to these corners. I think one of the key things about understanding the true dimension of the problem is understanding the complexity of the problem, and that's a first step to realistic responses.
David French, senior writer for National Review, thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. On Point is produced by Anna Bowman, Brian Hardzinski, Eileen Imada, Stefano Cozzonis, Allison Poli, Catherine Proctor, Tanya Raleigh, Jeremy Relosa, and James Ross. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. Coming up tomorrow, President Trump demands the Justice Department find out if the FBI spied on his campaign. We'll look at the evidence. I'm Ray Suarez. This is On Point.